You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to this Mailbag Thursday edition of the Locked On Jets podcast. It is October 4th, 2018. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com, and we will jump into the mailbag today. Each Thursday, we take questions that are emailed to me and submitted in the comment section of gangrenenation.com. I'm going to start off the show by telling you I got a lot of good questions this week. I'm not ready to take any questions about the offseason yet. We had a few people asking about a potential coaching search, some about the draft, some about free agency. I think it's a little too early to address those. Those were good questions. I just think there's a lot of football left to be played, so we don't know who the hot coaches are going to be yet. They will emerge over the course of the season. Same with when it comes to the draft. You know, lots of college football left. Guys will rise up the board. Some guys will fall. Free agency as well, who's going to have a breakout season in the NFL. And there's also a lot of football to be played. You know, we talk about a coaching search. I mean, it's not crazy to think the Jets could win this game this week against Denver and then be right back in the mix. So, I mean, as bad as they've looked the last 2 weeks. So we'll take those a little bit further down the line. I think maybe November, December, if things aren't looking that great, that's when we'll take a look at some of those issues. But I appreciate the questions. Those were good questions. It's just I think it's a little early to get into those. So we'll start with a question that was emailed to me by a listener named Pierre. John, there has been a lot of focus on the Jets' lack of talent on the offensive line as of late. In light of this, I'd like to look at Mike Maccagnan's draft record over the 4 years he's been general manager. He has stated many times that he subscribes to the best player available draft philosophy. If this was the case, one would expect to see an even distribution of picks across the various positions. Given that 5 of the 22 starters are offensive linemen, something in the range of 23% of the picks should be at this position. The Jets have picked a disproportionately low number of offensive linemen in his drafts, using only 2 fifth-round picks for offensive linemen in just 4 years. Jarvis Harrison in 2015, Brandon Chell in 2016. During this time, they have had 28 picks, so only 7% have been allocated to the offensive line. Doesn't this prove that Maccagnan stated the best player available philosophy is really just lip service? What is his real approach, and why has he failed in this area? Well, I think it's difficult to disprove best player available. I mean, every team says that they're taking best player available. We don't know what their draft board looks like, but it doesn't seem like the Jets are focused on the offensive line in the draft as well as much as they should be. And I think you also have to do have to consider positional value when you talk about the draft. And offensive line is probably a position you should hedge more toward. It seems like the Jets' philosophy on the offensive line is go more toward veteran players, which is a philosophy you see a lot of in the league. There are a lot of people in the league who think that it's become really tough to develop offensive linemen through the draft because there's less practice time where you're allowed to make contact, so less padded practices, which makes it tough. It's tough to develop players at a physical position like offensive line if practices aren't full contact. They don't have 2 days anymore in training camp. And also colleges, the prevalence of the screen game in college, because there's different rules about players being ineligible down the field. It's 3 yards in college versus 1 yard in the NFL, which means teams in college throw screens a lot more. You throw screens, the offensive linemen don't really need to develop their blocking skills. So I think it does kind of seem like there's a conscious effort by Maccagnan to go more veteran-oriented on the offensive line. The Jets have made plenty of investments along the offensive line. I mean, it's not as though the Jets are afraid to commit to the offensive line. They're allocating $37 million in cap space this year. According to Over the Cap, that's the fourth highest allocation of cap space. So the Jets definitely like to go more of a veteran line, it seems that way. And, I mean, they've throughout Maccagnan's tenure, they've spent a lot of money on the offensive line. You know, what's the problem? I think the first problem is that if they are going best player available, they might be going best player available, but they've picked the wrong players. And I mean, that they've just, it's one thing to go best player available and actually hit on the pick. They've whiffed on too many picks, you know, even if it's not offensive line. They've just whiffed on too many of these picks. And I do think that there comes to a point where you question the best player available philosophy, because I think it needs to be a mix of a few different things, one of which does pertain to positional value. If it's close between two guys, Do you maybe go with a guy who's a little less talented who plays a more important position? I think so. So I think that the Jets need to be. And also, you look at the great offensive lines in this league, they tend to have multiple homegrown players that the team drafted and developed. So I do think the Jets need to focus, even if they are going best player available, pure BPA. I think they would be wise to maybe hedge their bets a little bit and focus more on the offensive line. And I think this year's, heading into this year's draft, the situation they're in, trying to develop a young quarterback in Sam Darnold, you really have to hedge toward offensive line. If there's a guy you think is going to be a good offensive lineman, you almost have to take him. You almost have to prioritize that over any other position, except maybe edge rusher. So I think that I question Maccagnan's philosophy in that sense. I'm not a big fan of just loading up on veterans and not investing in the offensive line. So he may be. I mean, it's possible he is looking best player available, and they just haven't felt like an offensive lineman is the best player available. The problem is two-pronged. First of all, you need to hedge a little bit toward the offensive line, I think. And second is that it wouldn't be as big of a deal as if they were hitting on more of their draft picks. You know, if you avoid the offensive line, but you're hitting on wide receivers, you're hitting on guys at other positions, you know, then it's a little different. Hitting on corners, they haven't really hit on many picks. So I think that as much as anything is a pretty big problem. Our next question was also an email. It was sent by a listener named Kent. John, love the podcast and great insight you bring every day. Thanks, Kent. Appreciate that. I'm starting to feel like Todd Bowles gave up his best offensive asset when he fired John Morton. We heard that Morton was let go because he didn't run the ball enough. Yet multiple times this season, we've seen the Jets set up with an empty backfield on a third and short situation, only to have the drive stall out. Most glaring being the Jacksonville game where they ran back-to-back pass plays, third and one and fourth and one. This to me has been the most egregious Todd Bowles error. John Morton at the very least knew how to create a viable offense by using the same personnel virtually until McCown got hurt, of course. Thoughts? Well, I mean, I don't get how Morton was the offensive coordinator they fired last year if we were talking about performance, because you look at Casey Rogers, who, you know, is a friend of Bowles, you know, it's widely reported they're friends. This defense has not been that good since Casey Rogers has been there. He hasn't been fired. The Jets, of course, made a change at special teams coordinator after Bowles' first season. And the special teams unit is playing better this year, but I mean, based on the way that the unit performed in Brant Boyer's tenure, did Boyer really deserve another year? So I question why Morton was the only guy who was let go. I was having a discussion about this earlier in the week, and I was a little skeptical last year about whether Morton was the guy I wanted to guide a rookie quarterback. And there are a couple of reasons I thought that. You know, I had heard, and I mean, if you listened to the podcast a year ago, we had Matt Forte on. He was one of the guys who told me on the podcast. It was not in the context of a rookie quarterback, but he talked about how like verbiage was more complicated. There are things I saw out there. This offense seemed like the Morton offense seemed like it may have been better off run by a veteran who had experience, who, you know, understood concepts the way McCown did. I was a little skeptical about Morton as a guy who to develop a young quarterback. If the Jets had made a coaching change and it had come out that the reason was that they were not comfortable, they were not sold on Morton's ability to develop a rookie quarterback, I could have bought that. The reason they came out with made no sense. The idea that they needed to run the ball. This is a league where the passing game has taken over. The passing game, you got to pass to win games in the NFL now. This is a passing league. So why you fire a guy because he doesn't run the ball enough? It makes no sense. And he did. I mean, given the circumstances Morton had last year, I thought he did a pretty good job. Now, I think Jets fans are maybe going a little overboard. This was not Bill Walsh they let go. But I think if we're talking about performance, just purely based on performance, expectations versus how the Jets actually played last year, Morton probably deserved another year. I don't think he did anything performance-wise to earn his dismissal. So I think it's a valid question why the Jets made this change, because although I'm not totally sold on the idea of Morton developing a young quarterback, I got to say, through 4 weeks I'm watching this scheme, I'm not sold on Jeremy Bates' ability to develop a young quarterback either. It seems like, you know, if I have a young quarterback, I want to create easy completions. I want to use motions. I want to use, play designs, misdirections. I want to do things that create easy completions, make my quarterback's job easier. And I'm not seeing any of that out of Bates. And I almost feel the same way with Bates as I said about Morton, where, yeah, if I had a veteran quarterback who knows what he's doing back there, I'm sure Bates would be fine. I think it'd be great, but I don't see Bates really scheming guys open. I don't see Bates creating easy plays for Darnold based on the scheme. And, you know, a guy who came up, Matt LaFleur, who's become kind of a hot commodity, he's with the Tennessee Titans. So just for the heck of it, I watched the first drive the Titans had against the Eagles, and there were probably four plays that were more creative than anything I saw the Jets run against Jacksonville, just design that made the play easier on the offense to execute because they got guys flowing in the wrong direction on misdirection. They used a motion to create an easy completion, forced the defense to tip its coverage. I saw four plays that were probably better designed than anything I saw the Jets run. So I think it's a fair question why if you're going to fire John Morton, you better, after the job Morton did last year, you better do something. You better come up with a better guy than what we've seen from Bates this year, because Bates has not been very impressive. And I got to be honest with you, I do think the offense has kind of taken a step back in terms of its design, in terms of its play calling so far this year. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie today, that's MyBookie, and if you use promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account, you can claim up to $1,000 in free play. And if you're willing to hold out until after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you can get an extra $25 free play by using promo code LOCKEDON25, LOCKEDON number 2, number 5. You play, you win, you get paid at MyBookie. Isn't it crazy how much we pay for new brand name clothes? Why do we buy new kids' clothes if they just outgrow them in a few months? Wouldn't it be great if there was a place to discover awesome discounts on gently used clothes? There is, Swap.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Stop driving to store after store and sifting through racks. Easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds on Swap.com with easy-to-use filters to find just what you need. Over 14 million tons of textiles are wasted each year. Shopping secondhand at Swap.com helps prevent textile waste from polluting the environment, which is something you can feel good about. With Swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price on your favorite brands like Carter's, Nike, J.Crew, and Gap. Quality hand-inspected items are added daily. If something doesn't fit, enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. And we have a special offer for our listeners. Get 35% off select items with your first order by using the promo code LOCKEDON. Plus, find new deals every day on Swap.com's homepage. Again, that's Swap.com. Next question, another email. Seems like the price tag of Le'Veon Bell has come way down. Based on the performance of the offense at the quarter pole, do you think it's worthwhile to bring him in? Sam needs weapons. You're not wrong. Sam does need weapons. I agree with that. I think that when you're building this roster out, you're trying to balance the immediate needs with the long term. And for a guy like Le'Veon Bell, I don't think the balance is there. From the standpoint, this team's 1-3. I'm not sure I'm a buyer right now as we get closer to the trade deadline. So I would struggle to bring in Le'Veon, because the issue with Le'Veon Bell, as I understand it, is because he's under the franchise tag, the Jets can't extend him right now if they trade for him. So you'd be talking about a rental at 1-3. I just don't think you're balancing short term and long term. I think the Jets are a team that should be leaning toward the long term as they make their decisions. I just have a tough time justifying bringing in a running back for 12 games, because that's all you're getting Bell for, giving up a draft pick for that. And you know, the other thing is, you look at the running back additions that are made in this league. You look at the free agent moves that are made in this league at the running back position, and it just seems to me like the ones that really work out well are guys who are still closer to the beginning than the end, guys who don't have a ton of mileage on the odometer at the running back position. You think about the great free agent deals at the running back at this position in the league. Michael Turner, who was LaDainian Tomlinson, he was a backup in San Diego. Priest Holmes, who was a backup in Baltimore when he signed with Kansas City. Curtis Martin, who was used heavily in New England, but only 3 years into his career when the Jets signed him. I think you're better off going with low use guys. So I understand. Look, it makes total sense. I can't argue with the logic anybody's going to use about wanting to make a move for Le'Veon Bell, wanting to add him, because he's a tremendous player and the Jets do need to add weapons. I'm just not sure I see the value matchup with where the Jets are right now. I think right now Bell's pretty much a rental. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So do you want to give up a pick for a rental right now at 1-3? If the Jets are in a different spot, I could see it more. But I'm not sure where the team's at right now. It really makes a lot of sense. I understand people will disagree with that, and I think you have a valid point if you disagree with that, but that's just how I see it right now. Next question: if there was a draft round strictly for defense, what position would you want the Jets to address for the next 5 to 10 years? It's the position they haven't addressed for the last 12 years: edge rusher. They got to get a pass rusher off the edge. That's the most important. Any defense, no matter who you are, it's the most important position, and the Jets just don't address it. The league is a passing league now. It's a passing league. The best, most valuable commodity you can have is a pass rusher off the edge, because that's where the great pass rushers are. It just makes everybody better. The corners don't have to cover for as long because you have a guy getting to the quarterback. The quarterback's passes are more erratic. If you have interior linemen, they have to face less double teams because an elite edge rusher is going to draw double teams. If you're a team that likes to play coverage, you can get pressure to the quarterback. If you're a team that likes to blitz, it makes blitzes more effective, because if your pass rusher lines up on the left side, the line's going to slide left. It opens up blitzes from the right side. It's the most important position on defense. Unless you have like Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis is, you know, vintage in his prime Darrell Revis, or in his prime Deion Sanders, where you can put him one on one against the other team's best receiver with no help and play zone everywhere else, load the clog passing lanes. That's about the only player on a defense who matches the value of an elite edge rusher. So that's the position the Jets have got to address, and that might be the one spot. If you can find a really great edge rusher in this year's draft — I know I'm breaking my rule, I'm not going into specifics, but I'm breaking my rule a little bit by mentioning the draft — that would be the only position I might lean towards more than offensive line this coming season. Next question: if you could trade Robbie Anderson for a 5th-round pick right now, would you? What if it was a 6th? Would you entertain offers for Powell? Would you sell any square pegs on the offensive line that weren't solutions, specifically guards, to teams like the Panthers or Texans? So a couple questions there. At this point, look, if somebody's going to offer me a 5th-round pick for Robbie Anderson, they're probably going to offer it to me at the deadline. So I'm waiting a little while to see how things turn out there. It seems like it's selling off. I'm down on Anderson, but it seems like you're not getting a lot for him. And we talk about balancing short term with the long term. I'm not getting a lot in that deal, and I'm taking away from the limited assortment of weapons my quarterback has. So I'm not sure I'd be crazy about trading Anderson or Powell right now. If it was last year and I had McCown at quarterback, and I know the team wasn't going anywhere and it didn't really matter what was happening at quarterback, I would be more willing to do that. This year with Darnold, I care about my quarterback's development, even if the team's not going to win games. So just as again, it's a balance. I'm not getting a lot back in these deals, so I'm hesitant to reduce the number of playmakers my quarterback has, even though I know Anderson's a little bit down right now, especially if I'm only getting a late-round pick in return. And it's like I said, if that pick is being offered to me right now, it's probably not going to come off the table at the deadline. So if I want to make a deal, if I just decide that I'm done with these guys at the deadline, then I can still make that deal, probably. I understand that there's a risk these guys get hurt, but I'm willing to take that risk because I just don't think these are great deals. I think it's selling low. And as far as the offensive line goes, I can't imagine anybody would want to trade for any of these Jets offensive linemen after watching the way these guys perform. So I mean, if somebody wants to trade for one of these offensive linemen, you're crazy. That team's crazy. So if you want to do that, then maybe I'd listen, because I can't believe you're going to give me something for one of these offensive linemen. And I'm kind of skeptical another team would. But if another team's willing to get, I don't think any of these offensive linemen, aside from Brandon Schell, who I would not trade Brandon Schell because I think he's having a pretty solid year. But any of these other offensive linemen, you want one of them, please, you can have them. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on the Jets at MetLife Stadium. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving our listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you go to your favorite event. Next question is about Leonard Williams. Many Jets fans are coming to the realization that Leonard Williams is a good defensive lineman, but not a game wrecker. Well, you can count me in that number. But the question goes on. But isn't this the perfect time to extend him? He still hasn't tasted a big money contract, so he'd probably like more money right away. And since he doesn't have eye-popping stats that his agent can use as leverage, why wait until just before free agency when the Jets would have to pay him franchise tag money or more? Let's lock up a good player now for longer. What do you think? Well, I'll start with the caveat that the great unknown is what Leonard Williams wants in a contract. You know, we can't say. Is he willing to settle for a reasonable deal right now? Is his agent trying to would his agent settle for less than Aaron Donald? We don't know. So I'm going to play under the assumption, and it may be a mistaken assumption, that he's willing to leave some money on the table, which I think might be a reasonable assumption. I would have done this over the offseason because, again, he did not have a great statistical year last year. So I would have done it last offseason. But, yeah, I like where your head is at on this. I think that in today's NFL where the salary keeps going up, these free agent contracts keep getting crazier and crazier, you're almost always better off locking up a player as early as possible before inflation sets in, before the price tag goes up, because they're just, I mean, the deals just keep getting bigger and bigger. So the longer you wait, the more money you're costing yourself. I think in the long run, you're almost always saving money by locking a player. Even if you're paying a little more now, you're almost better off locking a player up before the price goes up at a given position. So I agree with that thinking. I think that that's something the Jets should have done over the offseason. Maybe they did, and it was never reported. I mean, sometimes these negotiations are private, but I think the earlier they can lock Leonard Williams off, the better. Assuming that, again, and this is an assumption that may be false, we never know. Some players are willing to leave some money on the table to stay with the team to get that financial security, know that they have a contract in their back pocket. Other guys want to wait for every last dollar. So we, you know, that plays into it. But yeah, I think all things equal right now, if Williams is willing to take a reasonable deal, that's something I'd be working on if I were the Jets. And last question, why is there so much variability in performance for teams across the NFL from week to week? The Jets started off like gangbusters, then lay three eggs. The Jags spank the Pats, then can't score a touchdown, then spank the Jets. Miami beats the Jets, then lays an egg to the Pats. Bills shut out by Packers, then beat the Vikings. This is across the board except for the Chiefs and the Rams. Is it most NFL teams are mediocre? The game has gotten so complex that consistency week to week is too hard. Players getting paid so much that sometimes they just mail it in. Well, I think the one thing to remember is that these are human beings. So, you know, no group of human beings is going to be great. Everybody has bad days. You know, there's only been one team in the history of this league in the Super Bowl era that's gone undefeated through a season. And since the schedule moved to 16 games, only been two teams that have been winless. So, you know, even bad teams have good days. Even good teams have bad days. I think the other thing that we don't appreciate enough is just how talented everybody is in the NFL. You know, even the guys who are bad players in the NFL are immensely talented. A bad NFL player is a great football player because you don't get to the NFL, even if you're a bench warmer, unless you are like one of the top players in the world. Even to be a bench warmer guy who never amounts to anything in the NFL, you had to be like a star in college. You had to be a high level performer, an elite athlete. And, you know, even a guy, let's just talk about the receiver position. A guy like Ardarius Stewart, who, you know, has not really developed into anything if we're going to be honest, probably is not going to develop into anything during his career. You stick him against Jalen Ramsey 100 times. Jalen Ramsey, you know, maybe the best corner in the NFL. Stick him against him 100 times. Look, Ramsey's better, more talented. Ramsey's going to win, you know, 90, 91, 92 times. But in those 100, Stewart's going to beat him a couple times just because Stewart's so talented. And by NFL standards, he's not that talented, but he has enough ability that he's going to beat Jalen Ramsey a couple times. And that goes, you know, that's team-wide. That goes team-wide. Even the worst team's going to have days where they're talented enough to beat the best team if they get a few breaks, if things go right. So I think, you know, there's some variability in this league. But you have to remember that the worst team in the NFL is still full of guys who are still pretty talented. They're still pretty good players. They may not be as good as the rest of the teams in the NFL, but they have enough in them to have one good game. And even the best, you know, no matter how good you are, sometimes you just have a stinker. It seems like every team just has one really bad, no matter how good the team is, they just have one game a year where nothing goes right. So I think there's just a lot of variability in the league. I think that's just how it goes. Thanks for listening today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast. Of course, it's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe, iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes. Hope you have a great Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow to preview the Jets and the Broncos, Week 5.